Every year, millions of global travelers flock to California in search of the world's finest cannabis. My job? Get these travelers very high and show them a great time. It's not always as easy as you'd think. Join me, your heady host and cannabis tour guide, Victor Pino, as I spend an hour each week trimming back the storied nuggets of life in the weed tourism game. I'll be joined by my friends, colleagues, and competitors across the cannabis industry. So get on board the weed bus, buckle up, and as always, smoke them if you got them. You're about to get high on tour with Victor Pino.
Welcome to another episode of High on Tour with Victor Pino.
And April Blast.
There she is. Hi, April.
Aloha.
It's been a long time.
Well, we've been on hiatus.
You got a good one for every opportunity. I want to welcome to the show today, very special guest and friend, and honestly, the person that I know with the most, maybe the person I know with the most number of Emerald Cups.
It's a team effort, but happy to be part of that team.
Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Morning Glory, fantastic hash maker of Heritage Hash Co., fine establishment in Ukiah, California, producing and purveying some of the finest hash and hashes and temple balls, right? You do all kinds of hashes and rosins and things. Tell me about Steve the man, Steve the myth, Steve
the hashishin.
The hashishin.
Where to begin? Let's see.
It was 1984.
Probably at about 5 years, and that's when I started existing on this realm.
So Steve, tell me a little bit about, give me the elevator pitch about Steve.
Let's see, Air Force Brad who got involved in the industry while he was in college in the Midwest, and then worked it as kind of a side gig, you might say, till he decided to make it a full-time thing by moving out to the Emerald Triangle itself and making cannabis a lifetime, the whole life culture for myself.
You want to stay in the first or the third person? Which one?
Let's
flip it back and forth.
I apologize.
It's okay.
The hash is good.
Steve is very high right now because before every episode of High on Tour and during every episode of High on Tour, we get high. And what we do here, for those that are new to the show, is we talk to people and friends and members of the community of cannabis and folks that have some sort of connection to tourism or cannabis tourism. And in this case, Steve is a great hash maker, and we definitely, you know, hype up all and promote all of his work that he does with Heritage Hash. Steve does know, and I will share for the audience, that my favorite product on the entire California market is one that he manufactures with his team, of course. And Steve, you want to tell the folks what that particular Johnny Casale favorite is? Little hint there.
Yes. So one of the amazing blessings it's been being part of the team of Heritage Hash Co. was being the first solventless company or crew that had the blessing of working with Johnny from Huckleberry Hill up in Southern Humboldt, the genetics that were passed down that were made by his mother. One of them, probably one that everyone loved, was Whitethorn Rose.
Oh, there it is. There's the words of the day.
There it is.
Whitethorn Rose.
So
I love that
stuff. Little backstory on Johnny, right? Johnny was a cultivator and he got, you know, busted like so many people did, helicopters overhead. Yep. He was in jail for how long was he in jail for? 25 years?
Oh my gosh.
12 years?
I don't know.
Bobby wrote about it. We'll
have to verify that when I put in the notes.
Yeah, he was in jail for quite a while. And it's a real trip, you know, it's a still trip to him to be able to grow legally with that trauma in the background. Seriously, you guys.
Yeah.
So big ups. Big ups to Johnny. Big ups to Rose, big ups to his mom, and big ups to you, Steve.
Yeah, and big ups to Steve's mom.
Thank you.
She did
a good job.
Thanks, mom.
Everybody, thank your moms.
We always gotta say, yeah.
And important. If your mom's not around, thank the memory of your mom. Moms are dope. Anyway, moving on into more weed related and cannabis industry related talk. So Steve, we've been friends for a little while. I know that we're going to get into all the fun stuff that you do and get involved with outside of just pressing hash, but the moment right now calls us to ask a few important questions. So what's your title over at Heritage Hash? What do they call the hashishin or the hash maker over there? What is your title?
It is the proper term on the white market we call ourselves manufacturing specialists.
Okay. Why do we do the white black market thing? I just want to ask. I want to know.
Why are we still so boring, doing
it? It sounds like so manufacturing like monochromatic.
God, we sound so New Jersey. Just
Steve.
Like,
Steve. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, look, I want to know more about Steve. I'm just digressing here, but I want to know more about Steve. I want to know more about, you know, what he's learned over the years. Tell us, Steve, how did you get involved with the crew at Heritage Hash? What is the origin story of your being? What is the origin story of you coming to, you know, amass how many emerald cups do you have under your belt?
Yeah, how many cups do you have?
Oh goodness, let me start from the beginning.
Answer the question. Start there.
Let's see. 2020. Our first one I want to say was 2021, maybe, with getting first place in White Thorn Rose and full melt in the solventless category, I should say.
Okay.
And then we also got
there was like a cascade of wins after that.
Oh, goodness, there's
been so many, he can't even remember. He's over here like looking at his phone, figuring it out.
And then after that, it was 2022, we got first place again, and then second place for solventless at Emerald Cup. And then from my memory on top of my head, getting first place at Ego Clash that year as well. And then this, I should say, past year now, 2023, we got ninth place with that also. Mm-hmm.
And so how many is that? I'm going to add that up.
Goodness.
It's like nine.
Nine there alone, eight. Followed by first place for solventless hash infused pre-roll in 2023 as well. And that one was once again from Huckleberry Hill, White Thorn on White Thorn.
Living on the backs of White Thorn Rose.
It's the cultivars on why we get to be amazing hashish.
Well, I'm just kidding. No,
it is a great strain.
You know, I was at the Bohemian Chemist today, and you know, kudos to them all the way through for carrying, you know, your products and for listeners who don't know, Bohemian Chemist is one, to me, I think, one of the more beautiful dispensaries in all of Northern California. It's nestled in Anderson Valley. We do our tours at Emerald Farm tours into Anderson Valley. We kind of go through that experience there every time, and kudos to them for carrying some of the best local, you know, locally sourced products and quality sun-grown products. But I on the menu, I guess it was a holdover, it said White Thorn Rose, and I like threw my hands up, and it was like, and she was like, oh, you like that? I was like, that's like my holy grail. Like, when I see that on the menu, it's mine, you know. So, and especially when it's manufactured by you guys, like, I, you know, I know there's probably one or two units of that in California left, and somebody's got them in their fridge somewhere. But yeah, I just want to make sure that if that ever comes up, Steve,
I'll be real. I have a few Temple Balls I'm aging of that I'm storing, saving for special occasions for family member, my own blood.
You love awesome. The Temple Balls. Let me, why, I do. Why do you love, as a hash maker?
Old school.
I want to hear the perspective, right? Cause I'm a live rosin guy. I love the work you do in the live rosin spectrums. I love all that stuff. Why the Temple Ball, Steve?
For my personal preference, set of all of the concentrates, especially like what we would consider solventless, it, like, as Frenchie Cannoli said, the Temple Ball is the, like, that resin is the plant's most purest expression. I'm paraphrasing. I'm sorry. Please, Cherry Blossom Bell, if you're listening to this, I apologize if I misquote Frenchie. Cherry Blossom Bell, who I'm shouting out there, is Frenchie's first apprentice, who I've honestly, being the amazing hashishin many people know me as today, it wouldn't be. She's helped me come a long way from washing biomass in the hills in the Willits area to working at Heritage Hash Co. with her.
That's amazing. Yeah. So, but why the Temple Ball?
Sorry about that. And with that, I'm personally, I love old school. I love hashish. I personally love hashish. I just love the feeling I get from edibles, from vape, from using a three-hole bowl, all forms of it, smoking hashish with a hookah, or out of a hookah, I should say. The high I feel, it's medicinal for me.
It's
personally.
Like a, it's like a very wide sure. spectrum, it's like a full and, spectrum.
And
yeah.
with the Temple Ball, like, especially as it's aging over time, these temple balls, something magical happens as they age on and on. Like, there's many flavors I've had where I've waited, like, pressed them right into temple balls, smoked them right away, and then that exact flavor I'm keeping stored aside in a cut, stored aside, and 3 months go by, I'll break into one and smoke it. 6 months go by, and there's some I've had for 2.5 years now I'm waiting to break open.
Wow.
To see how it is. But each time, like,
so it's like changing like a wine in a bottle.
Like a, exactly like a wine or a whiskey in a barrel.
That's crazy. That's a really good, that's a really, yeah, great insight.
I think that's awesome, Steve, because one time Bobby and I were at a party, and Bobby loves old school hash, and, you know, we have a little collection of it. And so we were outside smoking, and here came these people, right, and sitting by us, and like, you know, oh, can we hit that hash and stuff? And then, oh, this is okay, but haven't you ever heard of live resin? And haven't you ever heard of this? And, you know, they didn't know that, of course, we knew what the hell it was, everything was, right? And this guy just continued to, like, trash talk old school hash, that it was irrelevant.
It's not irrelevant. So, I mean, honestly, I think not. Like, to carry off of, like, to jump off of what Steve was talking about just a second ago, I really do think that in many ways, bubble hash, or like, you know, like, you know, press, or, you know, temple balls, for example, like ice hash, right? You know, that form of preservation of cannabis is, in my mind, akin to like the way we preserve something really perishable like milk into cheese, right? You know, you can store cheese for ages as cheese, but if it were just milk, you know, so it's almost like the process makes it better and preserves it and, you know, enhances it in many ways. So I just like to make that analogy with my guests. And it's like, it's totally, yeah, what do you think? Reasonable?
Agreed. Also, like, we see it with people, how they cure salami, hanging it, covering it, having that, I'm probably getting this wrong, but it's like a protective mold almost, I want to say, that cures that salami as it's hanging in a proper cure room.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's
ham
true.
Ham in Spain, like the ham in Spain, you know?
Yeah.
Same.
So in your travels, Steve, I mean, you're living right here. We're live today from Anderson Valley. So we're in the heart of Anderson Valley on the 128 in the lower half of Mendocino County. We are in your hometown. Welcome. We're welcomed into your hometown, obviously.
So, and Steve, is that where did you land when you first moved to the Emerald Triangle?
Actually, I first landed in the Willits area. I was living there, and kind of a weird blessing, you might want to say, being able to move to Anderson Valley. It was in 2020 when the Oak Fire hit in Willits. It hit the mountain I was living on.
It was a huge fire. Oh, my God.
And fortunately, with that, I was affected, and someone who lived in Anderson Valley offered me to relocate here and help rebuild myself as I was living in this valley, and ended up loving it so much that found a spot to lease out here, and happy that this community took me in.
That's awesome. So tell us more about your escapades in hash making. What's it been like working with the likes of, you know, learning from and working with Bell, and working from, you know, learning, you know, the basically Frenchie's process through Frenchie's prime apprentice. Like, talk to me about that.
it's an amazing blessing that it's not an easy feat, I might say, but it has been a tremendous experience. Like, before, one of the amazing things was I had the honor of meeting Cherry Blossom Bell before I knew who she was in the industry, actually. Right, right. And we were working at a nursery together in Mendocino County, not knowing who she was. And I pressed these temple balls that I made from a batch myself, and I was giving them out to all the workers at the nursery. And I had no idea that this amazing woman was Frenchie's first apprentice. And I offered her a temple ball. She said yes, handed it to her. The next day, she just comes up to me and she says, "Hey, so Steve, I tried that temple ball of yours." And I was like, "Oh, what'd you think?" And all she said was, nodded her head, smiled, and said, "Not bad." Walked off.
That's hilarious.
And not knowing, and this is how I found out, because someone ran up and was like, "Steve, big up, bro. That's amazing." And I'm like,
just impressed, Bill.
Exactly. Exactly. And then that's when he told me, bro, like, bro, that is Frenchie Cannoli's. That's Cherry Blossom Bell, Frenchie Cannoli's first apprentice. You gave her a temple ball and she said, not bad.
And then it was like rocket ship to success and stardom for Steve.
It's been a blessing. It's been a blessing, like I said.
No, I'm not saying that facetiously. I'm serious. No. Like it's like, you may have met the right people, but like it was your quality work that got you to where you are today.
It's hard making hash, yeah. You know? Can you explain the process a little bit? Because maybe our listeners haven't really, you know, seen. Well,
then maybe our listeners should go on an Emerald Farm tour. You know, and maybe see this in person.
Yes, but request Emerald Farm Tours to stop at Heritage Hash, at Heritage Mendocino, at Heritage Hash.
Well, maybe if you were there when I stopped by and you worked a little more.
Monday to Thursdays, you'll see me. It's because that's why, dude.
Oh, you've got 3-day weekends, Friday through Sunday?
For right now, I do. We'll see. Things happen, but I'm just going with the flow and just having a passion for the hash and washing that hash.
A passion. That's right on. Passion. Nice. So yeah, tell us about the hash making process. Like, tell us about, what's a day in the life of making hash look like for Steve Morning Glory?
So the process we do at Heritage Hash Co. specifically is ice water sifting. With that, we're using ice, water, and with the biomass floating in that ice and water at the right temperature, when we're agitating the material, aka having it in that large vessel that you see in the lab where we're washing the plant material, as it's going through that vortex, the resin or the trichome glands are breaking off the plant material and also being suspended in that water. With that, after those trichome heads break off, we pour the water out through a multiple level bag system that is measured through, the unit of measurement is called microns. And within each micron, there's different levels, or in a sense, maturity, age of different resin heads caught in those microns.
And that.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So I like to make my own. I didn't know that what separated the different microns.
Exactly. Like when you hear people, like if people say full spec hashish, that's mm-hmm. hashish. That's all those microns in that.
All of them mixed together.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's some micron levels that are more perfect for dabbing. There's some that are great for food infusions. Some that are better for just like infusing in joints. If you want to roll a joint, like there's different levels of the micron, each for its own purpose.
Yeah. That's, and then certain people get a grown affinity to those micron levels.
So then you strain the material through the micron bags.
Exactly. Then, once we catch it in those micron bags, we then wash the resin to help get any impurities or particulate that's caught within that resin out of it. And then what we'll do is we'll then collect those resin, that wet resin, and we accelerate the drying process of that ice water hash with the help of pharmaceutical grade freeze dryers. If you're at home hash making, like generally air drying hash on my own time in the right setting or right type of cure room, or any air drying can take anywhere from, if you have the right tools, I should say, anywhere from 3 to 10 days. With the help of a freeze dryer, it significantly increases the drying process from those 3 to 10 days and to 20 to 24 hours if you have the right temperature down on your freeze dryer.
Amazing.
So, amazing. Yeah,
it's freeze dried.
Correct. Then it's freeze dried, and then from there, that loose sifted resin. A lot of people like to call that hash, but if we're being proper with our terminology, it's properly called loose resin or loose ice water sift. And then from there, depending on the micron level, the common one that certain micron levels are that we'll use will be put in. To will be made into rosin, I should say, which is real popular in and popular, I should say, in the concentrate community, especially with dabbing, as Victor knows.
Well, I prefer rosin because of the, you know, it's really
just, absolutely, dude. It's the apple delicious. Juice of it's the apple juice of that trichome and pressed hashish, like the temple ball is applesauce.
Yeah,
they're both from the apples we love.
Yeah, and I also really. You know, my preference for rosin really has to do with like just the simplicity. It might be a very intense mechanical process, but the simplicity of the solvent, right? Just like ice cold water, and ice cold water, combined with some heat and time, you know, under some plates and pressure, and it's just like it turns into essentially gold, like an extraction of gold, beautiful. Almost like a clear, resinous, some of the most unadulterated, pure, just representation of what it is to be that plant that it came from. And I think there's something to be said, which I've also said in a lot of things when I've been asked about it in tours and such, people ask me, well, is there a difference in the flavor between smoking it right from the press? Like literally it's squeezing fresh. And it's still like warm and gooey when you put it in your dab rig versus something that even sat in the freezer for 24 hours. And I will contend that what you're getting out of the flavor and out of the profile and the experience of that press coming like gooing out of the press at that moment that it's out of the press and just freshly pressed, there are unique profiles there that you're not going to get a day later. You know, like you're going to evaporate a lot of those volatile terpenes off super quickly. And if you're catching that stuff right off of the, that's, what is it? Like it's, what do they say? You know, the plant is in the best form of itself it'll ever be, I guess, at the moment you're cutting it down, right? It's yours to ruin from that point forward, right? And so so that moment of just the press is like, you can taste just flavors in there that just don't exist after the fact.
I like to agree with that. And this is just something I'm personally observing about it as well. Like a lot of people will take that rosin and do the cold curing process to get a batter or a different consistency, or even cold cure it to decarboxylate it further to help make it into like vape cart ready or vape cart rosin. Like there's many things you can do with that cold cure and the post-processing after you squish it into that fresh pressed rosin. However, I am noticing though, just from personal dabbing experience, that if the farmer has that genetic to a T, if they know how to grow it right, the fresh press is better than cold curing it. I felt like the terpenes are more of what the plant was meant to express itself as. And then like almost like some of those more fruity terpenes, if the farmer has it right and then we cold cure it,
they'll stay.
It not just has that, not those fruit terps, but almost more over ripened. Like some of the, like, it just depends on not just the genetic, but the cultivar as well, how they grow it.
Yeah. I mean, you're expressing those profiles of flavor in concentration. I mean, in theory, the better product going into it, and then of course putting your utmost best process to it, is going to maximize that. That, I guess, is the holy grail of what you're trying to achieve, right? Like potency and flavor in its max output from the inputs going in. No?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, can I ask you a couple questions, Steve?
Do I need my lawyer? I'm kidding.
No, go on. maybe. All right. So what is rosin jam? Because I've seen that lately and I was like, I don't know what that is.
Yes, rosin jam is it's a post-processing method or process, you might want to say, of rosin or fresh pressed rosin, and which with that process you're crashing out the THCA into solventless diamonds while it's within the rosin itself. So why it's looking like jam is because there's crashed out THCA diamonds within it, and it's, I don't want to
say. What does that mean, crushed out?
Like crushed out? Or?
I apologize.
Yeah, crushed out, yeah.
You're using a cold curing process in a sense, using a cold curing process to form those THCA diamond crystals within the rosin itself.
Is that like under pressure or something?
like they're growing?
A cold curing process.
Oh, sorry, Mr.
So using a special heating process.
Oh, a special heating process. Thank you. Okay, got it.
Well, that cold curing heating process makes a confusing sense.
I'll be real. Some temperatures a lot of rosin artists do out there. It can be a very confusing phrase.
So I would imagine.
Is it an inferior product, you think?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. People, okay. There's kind of like, as I said with Victor, like the resin itself, like if we're looking at it, the cannabis plant with the resin on it, that's the apple tree. The hashish itself then pressed into temple balls, we made, that's the applesauce, and the rosin that many people enjoy dabbing, that's apple juice. And it's all different forms of apple that different people love. Everyone loves their own consistency, right. I might want to say, in terms of dabbing.
It's part of your own personal journey with your with the cannabis plant.
I definitely recommend it. I enjoy the rosin jams myself. If they're available, I'll definitely enjoy dabbing them.
Yeah. Some of them have a lot of flavor. It feels, they're really flavorful. Let's talk more about your favorite moments in the lab. Like, what are your favorite... Like what, you know, I'm sure you look at all your days differently. You're in the lab a bunch of days. Like, what's the day that you go into work and that day and you're like, today I'm going to do this. And that makes me happy.
When we have wash days in the lab, especially with new cultivars and new strains, we're going to be washing.
So like the R&D behind it.
In a sense, yes. It's collecting knowledge of, okay, this strain, which is these genetics, it's yielding, if we're getting a percentage of this, perfect. Or like there's somewhere... It might be like, I remember one of my personal records in the lab was washing a cured sour tangy, which I remember the first time I did a solo hat, like a complete on the person who introduced me to hash making. He had me wash a tangy genetic of his own, and I got so scared I messed it up because tangies are known not to be yielders in ice water sifting.
Okay.
And I was so embarrassed. He came back from his journey and he looked at the results. He just smiled and he just says, oh yeah, I hate washing tangy. That's why I had you do it for me.
Wow.
But definitely just showed, you got to have a heart for this process.
Yeah, totally.
But
so wash days.
Yes, definitely the wash days. And
all right.
Just the terpenes in the lab as we're washing the plants materialize in that cold room to seeing the beautiful resin through different levels of the microns as it's coming out of the large agitation tank vessel into the different levels and seeing, like, even sometimes you get to see the different beauty colors of those microns.
Oh, that sounds nice. Yeah. Yeah. This is like, you know, we're really getting gushy with the hash today. Like there's a lot of hashy conversation. April, before I go on, do you have any more questions for Steve? Because I do have a lot of questions.
And please keep talking terpy to me, guys.
Talk terpy all night.
Well, my next question I was going to ask is, like, so for people who make hash at home and they don't have a freeze dryer, I mean, some people do, but some people don't. What's the optimum room temperature to dry your hash in?
For my own personal experience, just because with availability, I enjoy washing hash at home as well. And I'll be real, I don't have personal money for a freeze dryer. So I completely agree, being a home hash maker, it's a little bit more of a process in terms of the drying process. But one thing I've learned, go to your local pizza store and get some pizza boxes to help with that. Seriously, get some parchment paper pizza boxes. I know it sounds... interesting,
you can order
but
pizza boxes online too.
Exactly.
It just helps keep them stacked.
Keep them stacked, and the cardboard in there helps absorb that moisture.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, it won't mold out if you're not in the, if you only have a house setting.
Would you ever put like desiccants in there with it? Or was that going to suck up like terpiness too?
I think it would, honestly.
Okay. So basically,
pizza boxes in a dark, room. Use a closet you rarely go into and stack them
and keep airflow.
Yes.
So
yes, airflow.
So no,
like not a big fan. A dental.
Yes.
Yeah. What are you smoking on right now?
Right.
This is the big question. We're halfway through the show. I need to know, what is Steve Morning Glory smoking on? What is the hash maker on the show putting in his hash bite?
Right now, since we spoke about a little bit, I have some GMO temple ball. I broke off one of my temple balls.
I've told everybody on the show that I love GMO. I am a I am a sucker for a good gassy GMO.
I'm smoking that GMO that I got from you, Victor.
Flower or the
hash that you gifted me.
Yes, that GMO was fire. That was GMO from Tall Tree Society.
Nice. Shout out to you guys. You guys are awesome.
Yeah. Tall Tree Society, Shane. Much love to Shane. Gotta love that guy. He's one of the best.
Another
fire hash maker. And I respect the guys that grow the weed and then process the weed.
Being a single source
and he's organic. It's just much love to that. Real talk though. Speaking of organic inputs, where do you find, this is getting deep hash questions here. Where are you finding, that there's a difference between like let's call it organic weed versus weed that's been grown not so organic? Are there differences in the process of and the outputs in hash making?
Yes.
Good question.
Yes. Yes. Next question.
I'm trying to kind of purposely say that without trying to put anyone on blast, but yes.
Whoa, you heard it here first, folks. No.
You can taste it. Like, yeah. I'll be real.
What's the taste?
I've had some where it's not organic, and I was so excited for the genetics. It was a Sunday driver genetic, and I was so excited after smoking flower of it in the past, and it was always a delicious terp profile to it. And then took a fat dab of rosin that it was washed with a non-organic process, and it literally had that taste for a brief moment, I recall, but then it just turned straight to medical rubber latex.
Ugh. But that's like a process that was used to manufacture. I'm talking about like spraying shit on plants.
That was part of it, yeah.
Oh, that was part of it.
Yeah.
Got it.
And it was confirmed. I was always wondering about that. Then another well-respected experienced hash maker, he gave me something else to try of this key lime genetic that someone made into rosin. And he goes, do you taste that? And I said, yes. And he confirmed it was a certain process.
Interesting.
Hmm.
Would it be
the nicest way I can say it?
Yeah, totally.
Sure.
Talk to me as a hash maker, now that we're into it, talk about CRC and how you feel about it. Tell me how you really feel about color remediation columns.
So I got a baseline.
Color remediation column, if for those who don't know, has become known. CRC, that terminology, has become to actually represent a multitude of processes that are employed and utilized when cleaning or purifying or removing adulterants from hashes. So let me just leave that there. Little quip of the day, the more you know. Steve, how do you feel about that?
If we're going to be real here, the CRC process is for a specific type of concentrate extraction process, which are hydrocarbon extractions. It's really not a hash. It's one thing a lot of the West confuse is that a lot of people call hydrocarbon like BHO, PHO, EHO, all standing for like butane. Extract or propane extract using those volatile solvents to extract the trichomes and the resin off. It's an extraction process like solventless, like ice water sifting, which is a concentrate, and it's concentrate as well, but definitely not hashish or hash.
Yeah.
It's something that especially a lot of people like I know who have come from Morocco, who come to visit, and they'll ask to go to the dispensary and they ask a bud tender, may I get some hash or hashish? And they pull out sauce and diamonds.
And you get a chemical slurry.
And you get a chemical slurry and they're just like, that's not dry sift or ice water sift hashish. That's not a temple ball. That's,
yeah. You know what? But
I just want to say as well, if we're looking at it as a different extraction process, it's just like martial arts. They're all beautiful things, but a karate master doesn't look at a judo master and say, you're wrong. They're two different arts.
Yeah.
They're two different arts. So it's a respect for it. And for CRC on that hydrocarbon part, like there's a lot of people out there using it to save poor grade material, but there's a little mantra that we kind of like having in all types of it, in all extractions, is fire in, fire out. If it's good plant material going into the hydrocarbonate process, if it's good plant material going into the ice water sift or the dry sifting hashish process or into rosin, it's going to be phenomenal concentrate. And sometimes like with CRC, like color remediation, people get taken off thinking you're destroying everything. But if you're only using one thing like diatomaceous clay to take out chlorophyll and not taking out terpenes.
Oh, you guys use diatomaceous?
No. That's hydrocarbon extract. We don't use CRC at all. Hydrocarbon.
No, they use it in there. That's
yeah. It's one of the processes, April, because there's also like a lot of.
Well, it's also used in beer. It's also used
exactly.
In beer. So I do tours at Firestone Walker, and I take people through the whole brewing and filtration process. And diatomaceous earth is used.
Yeah, and I mean, look,
another giant filtration system.
It's one more. It's it really begs the question. It's like there are very elitist kind of consumers that are like, that is not what I want to put in my body. And I understand that. I get that. But from the perspective of like providing hash to people or concentrates to people at all price points that everyone can enjoy and everyone can feel safe with and everybody can feel like they can smoke a concentrate. Like, it's important, I guess, to have clean quality versions of these products on the market because not everybody can afford a $56 or a $75 or a $90 gram of live rosin that I've, it's like you need to be able to accommodate different parts of the market and Absolutely. Not everybody can smoke. Not everybody can afford to smoke, the highest end of, So yeah, to that point, I think that's, you make a great point. Like, it's, I also want to call out the fact that like a lot of times the way I really think about this and when customers then hear me describe live resin or like guests hear me describe live resin against like live rosin, they'll immediately assume that because I'm smoking exclusively live rosin at that time, that somehow live resin is not as good. I'm not going to say it's not as good. It's just different. And one of the things I like to describe to people is like, it's also like, it's a product like any other. And, when you look at the food we eat, right, you can look at whole grain oats. You can look at, any one of these, sort of cereal products on the, look at any sort of sugar, commercial sugar cereal. What is happening there, right? They're basically taking a grain or more grains. They're disassembling them into their most basic primal parts in chemistry and then reassembling it as part of a balanced breakfast. Like it's what is happening with the cannabis plant. In essence, they're deconstructing the THC portions, the oleus, the resinous portions. They're taking it all apart and they're reintroducing it back into another, through a chemical process. They're reintroducing everything back together in a formulaic way, but it's not a representation of the plant the way you make hash. So now that I've set you up for it, get deep with me on like what is your vision for, what is the goal here? Like, we're getting better at making cleaner hash, we're getting more potent hash. Where are you working towards new and innovative things in your industry every day? Like, what are you doing every day to push the envelope forward?
Honestly, providing a solventless experience at an industrial level, doing my own personal hash washes, and even like when we do hand washes in the lab for special occasions, it's like 5 pounds of plant material we're washing at a time, as opposed to now that with the special agitation vessel that with the help of the CEO of our company that he helped develop from basically an old milk curding machine. We went from 5 pounds to over 100 pounds per wash session.
That's incredible.
How many gallons does that vessel hold?
500 at most.
But I mean, still, like you say industrial, I say bigger scale than, home use.
Absolutely.
But industrial sounds, I wouldn't use that term.
It sounds almost like macro brew over micro brew.
Right.
The work is in the art, and a lot of those awards we've won through, like especially the latest being top 10, like being ninth place out of like I want to say 52 to 56 entries in Ego Clash Invitational and Western Hemisphere invite only event. Getting ninth place, I want to say it was that one or the Riddles we did the first place year before that. It was industrial.
Okay,
we used the large vessel,
uh-huh.
and it came out so clean that The votes showed.
Yeah. The work proved proved the concept.
The cream came to the top.
Exactly.
What is
always.
What's your favorite cultivar to press right now? Like, what's the thing you're pressing right now or recently that's like producing?
Oh, let's see. In terms of latest flavors, we've been working with some amazing cultivars lately, with even down in the Sonoma County area. And one really good one, it was, let's see, Moroccan peaches, what we placed with. And that was grown, I want to say that was Luma Farms based out of the Petaluma area.
Okay.
And that was, oh my goodness, like the flavors, those guys have it down to a T on how they know how to grow down there. Like,
cool.
The work just shows because of what we're able to wash.
Petaluma Gap, man.
Yes. That terroir, that region of what they know how to grow there.
Oh, man. Steve, I you know, we're coming close to the end of our time here. We got another 4 or 5 minutes together here before we're going to start wrapping up.
It's hoping to go long.
Well, you're going to go longer because we're going to ask you to do something at the end. We got a finishing move request of you. But yeah, I want to ask a couple more questions about, you know, we asked you what you're smoking. We asked you what you like to press. All-time favorites from the man, from the one of the more impressive souls I've gotten to know in this industry. You're a lot of fun. We've DJed back to back together, right?
Yes,
like real talk, we're DJ friends. You know, you're much better at me. Much better at that than me, than I.
Keep at it. I've got 11 years ahead of you.
Dude. It's just like those cold, hard drops just kill the vibe. Yeah, I'm not good. I'm not good at all. But yeah, what's your favorite strain of all time? Like, what's the one that you smell and takes you back to that place, whatever that place may be, and tell us about that place.
Are we going for like top three? Cause I got
Give me top three. I'll take top three.
All right. First one, I want a personal favorite that in terms top one, and this catches a lot of people off guard, but I'm going to go with Hindu Skittles.
Okay. I wasn't expecting that one.
I know a lot of people get taken off guard by that, but hear me out. So a lot of the time, so if it's that Hindu Kush Landrace by Skittles, and every time I've had it, every time I've smoked it at as an ice water hash, it brings me back to the old school Hindu Kush taste, that old, how do I word it? Like earthy incense taste. Mm. And
like an old box of Nag Champa.
An old box of Nag Champa. And a lot of people who know me well know that I got my senior thesis. I got my degree from doing a senior thesis on a research topic of Afghanistan. So.
And you speak Mandarin, right?
Took that in college. Yep, took that in college. Wow.
You're a multitude of... A multifaceted individual. All right. All right. So number two on the list, next best strain that brings you back to a place and a time.
Red Dragon.
Ooh.
Red Dragon. Reason why I remember, I'm kind of snitching on myself here, but,
whoa.
But when I was in college, I remember moving that around in college. Wow. And people loved that back in like the early 2010 era in the Midwest.
Mine was that for me was the old pre-Arcata train wreck.
Oh,
that was just falling in our laps left and right. That was fantastic.
Third one, purple train wreck.
Whoa. And that was that next gen shit.
There's a whole small world experience on why I love that one.
A small world experience.
It's all a small world.
It's crazy how the industry is like that.
All right. Next question. This is what are you listening to right now? Like if there was like one song or album that we've talked about ourselves, we'd be DJs. We like music, obviously. We party together. Big shouts to Ben, our good friend, Grease with a Spoon. Got to shout him out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Much love to you, Greasy. Miss you, brother.
Yeah. Miss you, bro. He's in Mexico City right now. But anyway, yeah. What's the best album you're listening to right now? What's like if you were to give it a Grammy to the, you know, something within the last year that dropped out, what would you give a Grammy to?
Oh, honestly, that newer stuff Skrillex been releasing, that less dubstep, more UK garage that he got a Grammy for just now.
Okay.
It kind of caught me off guard because I've always I've expanded myself more, like listening to more drum and bass, listening to more lo-fi. I'm kind of all over. And that helped me introduce me to more of that UK garage vibe.
Fantastic. I love that we're like really distilling down who you are here. We're agitating you a little bit with that cold water questionnaire shaking the resin off.
Oh,
really capturing the cream and essence of Steve Morning Glory, a true meta moment in this podcast episode. So make sure you go visit metathings.com for more information on that one. And Steve, tell me more before we let you go. What are you looking forward to in 2024?
Meeting amazing cultivars from all over the Emerald Triangle region.
I thought he was going to ice me out and say like, oh, winning another Emerald Cup.
Honestly, I'll be real. I submitted my name to DJ a few music festivals.
If you're listening out there in the world of music talent booking in the Northern California festival circuit, DJ Morning Glory needs the gig. Get him. Get at him. Tell everybody how they can find you, Morning Glory.
You can find me on Instagram. Just follow Steve_Morning_Glory. Or if you want to listen to some of the music I have a SoundCloud, AM_Glory.
Thank you, Steve. Well, it has been one heck of a 50 minutes here with you, buddy. I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast with April and I. It's been a long time, April, that we've done this, and I'm glad to be back in the saddle for this episode. But before we, you know what time it is, April, before we let Steve go.
Hot jokes.
You're high on tour hot take for the episode, Steve. That
hot
means
tokes.
Hot takes. All right, Steve is currently heating. You can hear the sound of this. He's torching this big glass, a quartz rod, right? Quartz rod. And he's going to take a fat dab of hash right now. And
sounds like a hash wizard.
I just want him to take, I'm making time, I'm filibustering while he heats his glass up so that he can take the hit. And then I'm going to have him answer the hot take of the episode. So Steve, before you get ready to take that dab, or as you get ready to take that dab, just remember, once that dab is exhaled, you're going to take 30 seconds and you're going to tell me anything you want about anything you want. This is your time to shine. Take your hit, buddy. He's going to take a big fat dab. Here we go. He's dabbing. I'll narrate for you guys, 'cause this is a podcast. He's dabbing. He's not even fazed by the smoke. He's just smiling through the whole thing. Exhaling. Now you're high on take hot tour, Steve. Before you lose it in 30 seconds, go for it. What is the thing?
Many people ask how I got that name, Morning Glory. You got to come meet me at Burning Man and I'll tell you.
Wow. Sexy. All right.
He's the best one yet.
He's over there. Hang in there, dude. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, April, for being the best co-host in the world. And thank you to Steve Morning Glory of Heritage Hash Co., best hash maker in the land. And thank you so much for being here. We can't wait to see you again next time. Can't wait to have you listen to us again next time on High on Tour. This is your boy Victor with Emerald Farm Tours, April with Higherway Travel, signing out. So yeah, so punning with intention. Yeah, that moment of the meta things, that was
a meta moment.
A meta moment. So metathings.com, but I don't know if it exists. May or may not exist. Look it up. You know what I do know exists, Steve?
Probably be like Zuck's thing.
What, Zuck's thing. Zuck's thang.com.
Watch does that exist? Like a metaphysical Bang. Alternative religious shop, you know.
For the longest time, you know, like before there was even... before there was what's that stupid website where you give people money just for being alive?
I don't know.
Patreon. That's the one. And so on Patreon,
I mean, there's a lot of them.
Jesus Christ.
You know, before we give people money for being alive.
Before there was Patreon and you could just give people money online like that.
I don't know. The titty bar.